Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Rule the Roost podcast. I'm your host, T'Trunk, and I'm also joined by Raj Baines. Raj is actually here. That was supposed to be my shit impression of him. Basically, we recorded the first half of this podcast and it all went tits up. No idea what's happened. We've had a technical error, but we talked about Arsenal for about 5 minutes, just repeated basically everything you've heard on Fighting Cock, Tottenham Way, other miscellaneous Tottenham podcasts. So that was about that. We're now going to go over to the West Ham section where Sebastian Stafford-Blaw is talking to Goal.com's Harry Sherlock.
Hello, welcome to our interview bit on Rule the Roost. We've got West Ham on Saturday evening at 5:30. So a little bit different this week. We haven't got a West Ham fan on, but we've got the next best thing. We've got a Spurs fan, Harry Sherlock, who is actually Goal.com's West Ham correspondent. Hello, Harry.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, mate, I'm not too bad, not too bad. I always feel a bit awkward because obviously we've done like 10 minutes on Skype, we've chatted, we've caught up.
Yeah.
Feels a bit artificial, doesn't it? This, you know.
Does a bit.
Yeah,
does
okay.
A bit, yeah.
Let's talk about West Ham. We'll get to the stadium. Because that's obviously the... we'll get to it. Talk to me about West Ham's form at the moment.
Well, they're just poor, I think, is the word to use. There was kind of a ray of light when they beat Chelsea in the EFL Cup. I think everyone kind of expected that to be a bit of a tinderbox, really.
I think you also have to call it the Caribou Cup now, mate, or something like that.
Okay, we can do that. The Caribou Cup, then.
It's got a new energy drink title sponsor, so let's stay in there. Yeah, exactly. Let's not get sued.
Okay, the Heart Disease Cup.
Yep.
West Ham 2-1, and probably their best performance of the season as well. And then 4 days later, they went to Everton and were comprehensively beaten 2-0. They were really, really poor. Against Stoke City as well, they were just there, really, I think is the best word I can use for West Ham. They're just there at the moment. They're not winning games. There's been talk that Bilic is under pressure already. I personally think that that's madness because we like seeing them near the bottom of the league, don't we? So he can stay for a little bit. But they've just been really abysmal. They've got -9 goal difference, which is appallingly bad. It's just not been very good. But my concern with West Ham is that this is the game for them. This is their game of the season.
Oh, you know what I mean? It's their cup final, of course it is. It's also the last time they'll play at White Hart Lane, of course, barring like an FA Cup draw or something.
Yeah.
With West Ham, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the way it's been presented, and I've seen a couple of West Ham games this season, and every West Ham failure seems to have been sort of shunted into the shadow caused by the Olympic Stadium or the London Stadium. And my own take on that is it's a problem, but West Ham are also really, really bad at defending. I don't think the two are necessarily the same thing. Whereas it seems to be kind of, it's this blanket excuse from everybody that, you know, we can't get the segregation right in the Olympic Stadium. Therefore, you know, we suddenly can't defend set pieces and our defensive line looks like a zigzag. I mean, it just, yeah. go on, mate, sorry.
It's, It's a weird one because, in a way, Tottenham have got the exact same thing. You know, with the Champions League, with Wembley, there are lots of people who come away from Wembley and say, well, the pitch is too big. And it's like, well, no, actually against Leverkusen, we were dog shit.
Yeah.
Like, there's no two ways about that. We were
individual
just really
errors
poor.
Everywhere. It was one of the worst performances I've seen in about a year and a half. Absolutely dreadful.
I think it's one of the worst we've had under Poch.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, I think with West Ham, it's quite convenient that they've got this excuse. I think, to be honest, come November, 10, 11 games played. I think it's 11, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think we expected to see West Ham 17th, especially after the season they had last season.
No.
And there's a lot of quality in the team as well. I just think Bilic has let standards slip a lot. And I think a lot of the players have as well. You know, Mark Noble famously said it can't get any worse, and then it got worse. so there's that side of it. I think their defending is terrible. They are, the analogy I would use is that they're very much like a 14-year-old boy playing FIFA, where he wants to buy every striker he can, and he doesn't give a shit about the defence.
Yeah.
And West Ham do that every summer. They always go after a striker. I think they made a €40 million bid for Lacazette. They were after Batshuayi as well. And then all of a sudden, they had to settle for Simone Zaza and Andre Ayew and left James Collins as a starting centre-back in the Premier League. And if James Collins is your starting centre-back, then you're probably going to get relegated because he is that bad.
Yeah, well, he's also... Well, he's about 2 or 3 years past his best, and his best wasn't really anything special either.
No, well, he was always second fiddle to James Tomkins.
Yeah.
And he was a player, when he left, West Ham were kind of a bit like, well, we won't miss him that much. And now all of a sudden it's quite clear that actually they miss him a hell of a lot because they didn't replace him.
Yeah, I mean, the very strange thing to be talking about missing James Tomkins because, I mean, I saw just for the international break, obviously saw Palace's game with Liverpool. And Tompkins' performance in that game, which was hilarious. talk to me about Zaza, though, because I watched a bit of Zaza before he came over to this country. And I quite like him as a footballer. But since he's arrived here, he's been dreadful. I mean, not bad in the sort of the Vincent Janssen can't score goals way. I mean, just hopeless. Can't contribute in any way whatsoever. And you're in the press conferences with Slaven Bilic. Has he said anything about sort of settling in or difficulties that Zaza's experiencing in this country?
He said it was quite funny, in September he said he wouldn't be taking penalties.
No.
Which was a good move.
Yeah.
That's a sensible move from Slaven Bilic. Yeah. Very. Then he compared him to Bergkamp.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
not so
and
shrewd.
then he said a couple of months ago, it might have been October, I'm not sure, but he said that Zaza will come good. You know, we need patience. He's a foreign player playing in a foreign league. You know, the usual, the checklist for foreign players who haven't hit the ground running.
Yeah,
basically, Zaza is just really, really bad. I think is the thing, and it was a panic buy as well by West Ham because. Like I said earlier, like I alluded to, you know, they were after Lacazette, they were after Batshuayi, they settled on AU. He got injured very quickly.
Yeah. I think first game of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah. And West Ham suddenly went, shit, we need another striker.
Yeah.
And Zaza was kind of the only one they could get. They have apparently said to his parent club that if a bid comes in for him in January, they wouldn't be against allowing him to leave.
No, I'm not. No.
What Bilic says in public is very different to what's going on behind the scenes. I just think he is the archetypal, we'll take what we can get, and then you realise actually he just doesn't fit at all. He just isn't a West Ham player.
Funny thing about West Ham's transfer policy is that...
Is the policy probably?
The policy itself is yeah. There's a bit of mirth to be had there, of course. But It seems to me that, I mean, I remember reading, I mean, like you read the names over the summer that were connected with the club, and you know, the players and the sums that they were linked with. It all sounded a bit QPR circa Mark Hughes' time under the club, where it was a sort of, okay, we've had a good season, and instead of just sort of taking kind of making incremental improvements, you know, like you said earlier, actually, you know, a nice solid 10 to 15 million pound centre half would have done very nicely for that team. They wanted a name. They wanted a kind of look at us signing.
Absolutely.
And that seems to be like, I do like Zaza, but I didn't see where, on the basis that eventually Andy Carroll will be fit, on the basis that they had, I know they've let him go, but Sacco I quite like as a player. I thought he's
good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that he's very good. It's just that he was scoring goals and he was, you know, I know there's attitude questions and everything, but even so, and it just seems like a kind of run before you can walk situation where you've got this stadium and to fill it, you felt like you needed to spend £40 million on a Lacazette or, in this case, Zaza.
That's exactly it. That was exactly the reasoning that I was told, you know, when I was asking questions in the summer about, you know, is the interest real?
Yeah.
I mean, for starters, I mean, there was an inquiry made for Tevez as well. You know, that's how keen West Ham were to bring in a real marquee name. And it was at the expense of everything else.
Yeah.
You know, David Sullivan and David Gold, I just think they're terrible owners. I don't think they run West Ham properly at all.
I would
all.
Put Brady in there as well because... I mean, I agree with everything you said about Gold and Sullivan, but I think that Karen Brady's... Sorry, Lady Brady...
Lady Brady's
First of all, kind of a media facing presence is sometimes hopelessly naive. It's just a very strange ownership dynamic because it's kind of we want attention but only on our own terms all the time.
It's
very strange.
They are very we've got the whole thing with David Sullivan's son as well, who's kind of
Has that ever come up in the press room? I mean, I haven't actually been to the London Stadium yet, but I is that a kind of because it's weird.
It's weird. It's very weird. Yeah, there are he is indulged. I think is the word to use there.
Yeah.
To the point where it is quite ridiculous. You know, the things that he tweets and, you know, he is essentially the club's spokesman. And he's, I don't even know if he can legally buy a drink.
The thing is the part of me has sympathy. Look, if I was his age and my dad owned a football club, you better believe that I want to be able to do the same. But whether I'm allowed to do it is another issue entirely. You know,
well, that's it, isn't it? You know, you get a picture with the new signing or whatever, and you know, maybe you big yourself up to your mates. I mean, I'm sure he's got loads of friends at school, but
that's it. Yeah.
West Ham just look.
Well, he does.
So stupid.
He is like their spokesman because he kind of like he always breaks transfer news. He's always, and it's not even that he's doing it, and it's not even it's the owner's son that's doing it. It's just the kind of the. I'm going to sound like such a snob, Harry. It's the grammar. It's the grammar that goes with it. And he's just like, lads, you have aspirations to play Champions League football and this is happening. And the kind of like the quaint, oh, we're just a little East End club thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it would be quite funny. I completely get your point. It would be quite funny if they were in League One.
That's it. If this is Barnsley, if this is Oxford, if this is, you know, a team like that, then you can... I don't know. It's sort of an archaic quirk of the game, perhaps. But
yes, absolutely. I think it's... I just find it really quite odd. And I think West Ham's transfer policy in general is really quite odd. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. They go from one player to another like, you know, like kind of flicking TV stations.
Yeah.
It's really quite bizarre. I don't even know if they've got a scouting system. And I say that as someone who covers West Ham and who, you know, looks for transfer news wherever I can get it. And I don't think they've got a scouting system. It seems like we'll just pick the biggest name we can find and see if we can buy them. And I think a part of that definitely comes down to the fear of losing Payet in the summer.
Yeah.
I think they were desperate to bring someone in to say, look, Dimitri, we've signed someone kind of as good as you. Because, you know, Payet is saying, as a Spurs fan, is far too good for West Ham. He's far too good.
Yeah, that's it. And well, the thing is that you have to believe that whatever happens between now and May, or even maybe even now and January, like Payet will never have a chance to get a bigger payday than he does right now. Or play for a bigger club than he does right now. With respect to
exactly. Say,
and you have to believe that, you know, someone's going to say, okay, it's not sort of too far fetched to think that I don't want to start quoting clubs, but I think Payet's gone regardless. I mean, you know, I don't know how you can keep him. He is much too good to be playing at that level.
He is. And, you know, I did hear a story that an unnamed club, I understand that they're a Champions League club, but I'm not exactly sure who it was, made an inquiry about Payet to David Sullivan. And David Sullivan said, well, 100 million. and the reply came back, no, seriously. And he said, okay, 120 million.
Well, yeah. Well,
and
it's kind of, I mean, that sounds an awful lot like Arsenal to me. Okay, moving on from that. Right, so the Olympic Stadium, you have obviously, with your job, you'll have spent a bit of time there this season.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Oh, it's awful.
Okay.
It is awful. It's awful. Like, I can completely understand it as an Olympic venue.
Yeah.
And as somewhere to go and watch sport in general.
Rugby league was there yesterday. England played Australia there, and it looked like a great, great place to hold it. I mean,
yeah, that's fine. But when it comes down to football,
yeah,
it's just not designed for it. And I know a lot of people have said this, but it isn't. You know, there are huge gaps between just stands in general.
Yeah,
you know, the fans are really far away from the pitch. There is very little atmosphere, and it's becoming the albatross around their neck, because it's a vicious circle. As long as West Ham are playing badly, the London Stadium will be taking flak. I mean, I don't know how it can take flak when they keep losing away from home, because they do. But, you know, it is a terrible ground, and it's not finished. No. I think that's the key part of it. I mean, when I first went to the press room, I did the Juventus game.
Oh, well, the sort of the opening friendly game.
Yeah.
When Zaza scored.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. And it took me, no exaggeration, it took me half an hour to find the press room. I was walking around the stadium looking for an entrance.
Really?
I asked probably 9 or 10 different stewards, where is the press room? None of them knew. And then eventually I saw a tent that wouldn't look out of place, with a red cross on the side of it in the middle of a war zone.
Yeah.
You walk through that, you get into a car park, it's next to the bins. You know, this is how badly thought out this has been. And then you have to get lifts up, and the lifts continually break as well, because they haven't been installed properly. It's just a really, it was a bad idea from the outset.
Yeah.
And so many fans thought that if they fought in the stands at the start of the season, they'd get sent back to Upton Park.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They assumed that if they were violent enough, and this is, I should preface this by saying, this is a small portion of the support. This isn't everyone who buys a ticket. But they thought that if they provoked violence and fought in the stands and it was caught on television, because obviously there is a fascination with the new stadium with Sky, that they would be essentially evicted and they would go back to Upton Park. But they blew Upton Park up for a film with Pierce Brosnan.
Yep.
So, you know, what the fuck's gone wrong? It is a comedy of errors.
It's comedy of errors. It's such a shame, actually, because I mean, look, I'm Upton Park was a horrible place full of bastards, but it was one of the kind of the quintessentially English grounds. I mean, you remember what the walk was like down there, and And sort of if you're going around to the away end, the kind of the way you have to snake around the building through those tight little spaces, and it was sort of it was one of those proper urban football stadiums.
Yes, and very much so.
Yeah, no, I loved it for that in a sort of very shallow way, but it's just I have a great deal of sympathy with not necessarily the fans. Or I don't have any sympathy for Gold, Sullivan, and Brady because they, if you heist something and it turns out to be shit, well, you know, whatever. I mean, if something drops off the back of a lorry and it's broken, I mean, basically. Yeah. But I, you know, things like the local businesses around Upton Park and stuff, you know, that will just die now. And the kind of the complete abdication of responsibility that seems to have come from the ownership with regards to that. Okay, well, enough of that. Let's talk about Saturday. Tottenham should be at full strength. By all accounts, Toby Alderweireld is back. Harry Kane will be fit. Moussa Dembele, bit of a question mark, but should be okay. Yep. Vincent Janssen, probably not, because he got a pretty nasty concussion playing for Holland against Belgium. West Ham, injury news that you're aware of. I know we're a little bit far out. We're recording this on a Monday, so we can't be... so apologies for any inaccuracy.
I would... Obviously, Carroll's injured.
Yeah.
But I think we can just write that down for all eternity and just say that he isn't fit.
No.
Collins is a doubt with a calf injury, I think. And Winston Reid as well might miss the game.
Which would be terrific news from our perspective.
And I don't think Reece Oxford's fit either. I don't think Reece Oxford would be available to step in.
No.
So defensively, they are fucked, I think.
That's your professional diagnosis?
Yeah, it is. Their two key centre-backs will probably miss the game. And I would expect, I think you're right. I think Tottenham will probably be at full strength. Harry Kane would love to play against a defence that is leaking as many goals as West Ham is, because they are just, you know, they're conceding goals willy-nilly, really. Then they're just not at full strength. And it is this thing that, you know, a lot of people keep saying, well, once we've got players back, it'll be fine. And it's like, well, if you're in the relegation zone when those players come back and you can't get those points back, it's not going to be fine.
Well, there's at least a dozen sides in the past who've said exactly the same thing. You know, sort of managers who've talked about injury lists and, oh, we'll get our players back in February. And you're like, well, okay, but that's just theory. And how many times does that translate to nothing? You know, and the way I look at it, I mean, even with Reed and Collins available, like if you're a fragile defense and you have difficulty moving the ball out from the back and you have difficulty defending against sort of numerical mismatches and teams that move in quite a sort of cohesive but fluid way, I mean, West Ham's nightmare opponent at the moment is probably Tottenham or Liverpool or someone like that.
It is, and it's kind of a key time for Spurs to, I would say, reclaim a little bit of our mojo.
Yeah.
I think, because last season, Tottenham at West Ham at White Hart Lane was swaggering.
Brilliant,
you know, it was a fantastic performance, and Kyle Walker's goal at the end just kind of summed it up.
Yeah.
You know, it was just this right
side of the right.
Yeah.
Flicked in.
Where has that come from? And then obviously he undid it with a really ridiculous defensive decision about 3 minutes later. But, you know, it was a fantastic performance. I think we showed that we're back to where we need to be against Arsenal. And I kind of hope that this is the start of a run, because when I went to the Leverkusen game, I was talking to a couple of journalists and they were saying, well, if you beat Arsenal, you know, your momentum will be sucked out by the international break. And it's like, well, we beat Man City before the last international break and haven't won since. So, you know, it's about time we got the win. And I think it's a really key game for both teams, because if West Ham win the game, it's the kind of result that could really galvanise them and it could really kind of push them through the next couple of games, the Christmas period even going into. For Tottenham as well, you know, we've got Monaco and then Chelsea coming up.
That's it, yeah.
We need to get that momentum rolling. And I think from our perspective, looking at it, we're probably thinking, couldn't be a better time to play West Ham. West Ham are probably thinking, well, Tottenham will underestimate us. There couldn't be a better time to play Spurs.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm not sure we're really an underestimating kind of team. I mean, I don't think I could ever accuse Poch of doing that in the past, and I don't think our players are really wired that way. I mean, I think we're capable of being sloppy and a bit shit sometimes. And
yeah, you could confuse the two, I suppose.
They're not the same thing. I mean, it's like, you know, you can. The Leverkusen performance wasn't the result of us underestimating Leverkusen. We knew Leverkusen were a fucking good side because they battered us in the second half 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah, they did. That's true.
You know, they were very, very good. But I don't know. I mean, I like our chances. And, you know, just, yeah, close the chapter on White Hart Lane with something nice and resounding would be great.
Well, let's just hope it doesn't become that thing that Upton Park became. Because I couldn't stand that last season. Where it's the last time we'll play.
Or when they chanted that at us at the end. Yeah. That was pretty galling to hear that one.
Yeah,
that was a miserable night.
Sad memories.
Sad memories indeed, mate. Harry, I'll press you for a prediction.
2-0 Spurs.
Nice. Okay, mate. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I get shouted at if we run over too long with these. So we will kill it there. But thanks very much, and
thanks for having me, mate.
Hope to see you again soon, mate.
Thank you, Harry Sherlock. You could say that was elementary. Yeah,
I told you not to do that.
I couldn't resist, mate. You know, if there's a dad joke to be done, I'm not gonna shy away from that, am I? You know, it's what I bring. It's what I bring. Don't take that away from me. West Ham.
People, talking about your jokes, a lot of people have been very complimentary about your breakdown the other week for not ever being contacted directly by the Spurs media group.
I know. It does make me question as to how avid and Alyssa they've been, because it wasn't that out of character, was it, really?
I think just because it was passionate. And sort of maybe they felt the same being ignored by Tottenham social media presence.
Maybe. And by us probably as well. Or coated off by you from the Royal Roost account. I like the veneer that my abysmal social media kind of presence has given that. Because most people will probably think when the Royal Roost account's off on one, they'll think, oh, that's just Trunk doing that. Which...
It gives me a shield to hide behind, an elephant-shaped shield for me to do my worst.
Well, yeah, it does a bit, doesn't it?
Sometimes I just lose my patience and fucking say shit to people. My personality comes out more than it should.
That's all right, though, isn't it? I want to see Seb. I want to give Seb the key. Well, he's already got the keys to it, doesn't he?
Yeah, all he ever does is fucking retweet his own work. He never tweets it. He's not even DMing losses on it anymore. He's
a narcissist. right, let's.
To be fair, I do that. I do that. With
oh yeah, I do it with the odd fucking decent tweet that I do nowadays. So you know, guys.
At least me and Seb are trying to further our careers. You're just trying to get extra.
Mate, just first. Those little dopamine spits.
Happy days, mate. Nobody cares. True.
West Ham. Should we just? I think your brief to me was let's laugh at them for having a shit stadium, which is basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, I watched rugby there on telly because I've not seen much football on television from there. But England were playing Australia there in the Rugby League Four Nations, and I saw it on television for the first time. And it's laughable how sort of far away everything is, and sort of, you know, the camera angles feel as if you're from watching it from next door or from a blimp and shit. It's very strange.
Well, I saw, because I worked the Rugby World Cup, I saw an actual game, a union game played there, and it was shit.
Pretend rugby. Well,
either way, like the match aside, the actual kind of the atmosphere, so on and so forth. I mean, I've been critical of Wembley in the past, but this was another level. And I remember just feeling such a relief Spurs hadn't gotten that stadium, like for many reasons, but that as well.
Yeah, but we wouldn't, and I understand the reasons as to why we didn't move and why we shouldn't have moved and things, but we wouldn't have been in that stadium because Daniel Levy wanted to knock it down and use the scraps as the foundations of his own ground, which I still find funny. As a, you know, take this to the government who've just spent all this time talking about an Olympic legacy, and he's like, fuck your legacy. I'm gonna
I'll do the track up at Crystal Palace, you know,
I'm gonna melt it down and use you as scrap metal.
He's got no chill at all, that man.
But at least he wouldn't have sort of, you know, taken the piss out of the taxpayer for the next however many years.
Ah, mate, they're fucking bastards, the way they've gotten away with that. You know, I think even down to ridiculous things like the stewarding, they don't even pay for and stuff, do they?
Yeah, well, Sadiq Khan's launched an inquiry into it, hasn't it?
Yeah, loads of them have all resigned, haven't they?
Yeah. Because there's so much like overspend and sort of the operational cost of sort of taking down the seats to put the track out and doing it back up again and everything and whatnot are like crippling amounts of money. And West Ham don't pay anything towards it. It's sort of as if like, if you bought a house and I paid you like 1p rent a month is what it's equivalent of. And, you know, you pay out bills, you buy all my food, you wipe my ass for me, and I've given you a penny for it. And that's how it is.
Let's be honest, that deal was bent as fuck as well. Like, there's something so dodgy about that, the way they've managed to get that over the line. But, I mean, they're suffering for it now anyway. Like, it looks absolutely toilet there. I can only assume, like, looking at what happened with Chelsea, that unless the old Bill do something about it, it's going to be an absolute fucking war zone when Tottenham go there as well. And I'm not even trying to play up to this sort of, like, naughty boy thing. Like, it just, facts are, it will kick off there big time if the security is lax as it is. They're going to smash up the lane this weekend as well, aren't they? The toilets are going to get a right doing over the last game that you come to White Hart Lane.
In the corner of the ground, they're already in, sort of already operated by a crane anyway, so it's not as if. Is that where the away fans still are?
No, they're down in the other end, down in the other, like by, yeah, Park Lane, that end now. So they're, yeah.
All right.
Up the other way. But they're, oh, I don't know. It's going to be good. I think we should do them though, shouldn't we? Really? There's not an awful lot to them, really. Pyatt's.
They've been in poor form. Payet doesn't really seem arsed. He looked like a man who regretted not joining PSG or something.
Would you have him at Spurs?
No, because I don't think he has the engine for us. And I think he's Poundland Van der Vaart. He's not fit enough. He wouldn't be able to do 90 minutes of Pochettino football. He'd be entertaining to watch every now and then. Like he'd do something good, but
I think so. I can't remember who it was. But someone made a very good point at the end of last season that you only really appreciate kind of really the strengths and weaknesses of a player when you're watching a team and wanting them to win. And I can remember at the tail end of last season when West Ham played Leicester and really thinking, yeah, this will be all right. Like, West Ham will do Leicester in this one because they got Payet. And it's when Payet was kind of really, really big and so on and so forth. Watching him in that game and really wanting him to do well. And he did all right. Like, he did play well. But it's when you started to notice, as you were saying, things like the fact he doesn't fucking run for shit off the ball. You know, he doesn't really track back. He isn't that ballsy. Like, he's a classic luxury player. He's an old Tottenham player. He's the sort of player we would have had in the kind of, like, you know, early to mid-2000s sort of thing.
Exactly that. Only they're paying him like 120 grand a week, which is more than what we even entertain to pay anybody at our club. So there's all that sort of thing. No, I wouldn't have him. He's obviously fantastically talented and his dead balls are amazing to watch. And he does come up with, you know, a fantastic highlight reel. But we've said it time and time again about sort of how our team has worked under Pochettino and sort of the strength of it is, it's collective rather than individual, and that would fly in the face of everything we've done to introduce a player like that.
Fuck him. Fat fraud. Let's do some list of questions. Harry Dean, at Harold_Houdini asks, what do you think of our squad depth this year? The media seems to rip it to shreds, but I disagree.
It's all right. I mean, it's not the best squad in the competition, but it's by no means the worst one we've had. It's probably better than it was last year, I'd say. So I'm reasonably pleased with it. The issue we have is having as many players as we do, competing for places and keeping them happy. The Champions League will help, but you've seen it with even players of a level of Chadley. We've not been able to keep them against their will. They've wanted to go elsewhere to play first team football because they are essentially a squad player with us. So that's the real task for us, is keeping the players who are just that level below entertained. I think that's half the reason why those players in the level below tend to be youth teamers, because they've got an incentive to want to play first team football more than, you know, an established international like Chadley might do. So we're getting the balance right. It'll take time. We've said it for years now, ever since this thing's begun, that we're not a club like Manchester City or Chelsea or Man United, who can spunk all this money in one window and just fill it up full of, you know, names and talent like that, because, you know, we've not got horrible money to do it with, or we've not had 20 years of unprecedented success like Manchester United have to spend the money on. So we've got to do it slowly. It's always been a marathon rather than a sprint with us, and just because we've had one very good season doesn't mean we should ever lose sight of that. I think that's when we start sort of becoming self-defeating and losing eye of the real sort of long-term aspirations and projects, and that's when you start to get disenfranchised and call time on something before you're ready to, and I don't want that to happen. I mean, the other week...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What was it? The World Series when the Cubs won. I couldn't sleep, so I ended up watching quite a few of those games. And like, it was the first time in my life I'd ever really watched any baseball. But to see them fans after, what was it, 108 years, they'd never won anything, to see how happy they were, and sort of that one time that sort of something had happened good in their lives. And, you know, even before that with the basketball and watching the Cleveland fans there when they won, and sort of the Cleveland players as well. It was, there's something to be said for that one moment of glory under piles and mountains of shit. I think that means so much more and resonates a lot more. And I think that high is higher than anyone can have from sort of having a dynasty or anything.
I'm
like
too
that.
Bitter and horrible, I mean, about all that now, though, mate. You know, like the Cubs and all that kind of stuff. I'm just like, don't care, hasn't happened to Spurs. Don't care if someone else is happy. I know it might be nice. That's honestly, that's just my gut thing. It's selfish and horrible, but I'm just like, it's not fair. I want Spurs to do it. Like,
yeah, but I understand that. But the one thought I had while I was watching it is, I can't wait until this does happen to Tottenham, and sort of, you know, I can't, the sort of the feeling that I can't really imagine what it would be. That unrivaled ecstasy and euphoria of actually winning something and having that to finally, you know, hold and cherish and have that moment where you can sort of accept it and be happy. And
we can
happy.
Still do the treble this year, mate. We can still do the lead, what the Leeds Rhinos did, so, you know.
The Leeds Rhinos won 7 championships in 11 years, I think, so I'm not sure we're going to do that. So, but, you know, ending it on a treble wasn't too bad.
Yeah, wasn't it?
I always feel guilty when sort of I complain about never seeing anybody win anything. I do tend to forget that my rugby league team is sort of the Manchester United of rugby league, in that we've the Super League era has been defined by everything we've been winning.
So does everyone hate you?
Essentially, yeah, it's the biggest, probably the biggest club in England at the minute, in terms of sort of we've got a lot of money because it's a city club and it's rugby league. A lot of towns tend to be involved. We've got a big stadium and, you know, we can afford to pay players and keep them there. But the success of what we had in a salary cap sport was down to sort of players being happy to accept less to win more rather than sort of a Manchester City type thing. So, and the backbone of the squad for a decade was academy products, so that we can never be accused of doing anything untoward, because there was a 30-year drought before we won in 2004. So it was fantastic planning. I mean, the parallels are there between Tottenham and Leeds, if you want to draw them, in that, you know, there's a massive drought and we've got a young coach with, you know, a team that's made up of academy products and good purchases and an overwhelming ideology and, you know, long-term plan to success. And if we come anywhere close to replicating what Leeds did with that same idea, then this podcast will be a very different place in 10 years' time.
So, mate. James Lewis at JLewis2891 asks, are we going to have to break our wage structure or risk losing our key players? I guess this follows on the news that both Lloris and Harry Kane, there's some rumblings of discontent, which is probably just bullshit created. However, if we're going to go with the no smoke without fire tack, apparently Harry Kane in particular at the moment is apparently wanting a 120 grand a week, which really is fair, to be honest. If you think Jamie Vardy's on 100 grand a week at Leicester City, you know.
100 grand's just basic now. It's not even a lot in terms of a weekly wage. I think Gareth Bale just signed 650 grand a week.
Something obscene. Like, yeah, something like really, really obscene.
Sort of, I remember when Fulham signed Berbatov, they got him because they gave him 100 grand a week. It's not as if it's out of the realms of you know, normal in this day and age. So I think they will end up getting paid. It's just sort of the way we've been dealing with contracts, especially with younger players like Kane, is doing it every 6 months and knocking them up in increments to give them sort of an incentive.
You'd assume he's on about 80 now, wouldn't you, Kane?
Yeah, I think they said when Ericsson was stalling over his, he's now on 70. So it's not as if we've bumped everyone up. I believe Moussa Sissoko might be one of our highest earners, which is an appalling thought. it's not in terms of, you know, how good he is, but, you know, that falls in line as well. But the fact that we were willing to sort of sacrifice that, you know, the not the structure, but sort of people earning their way up the pay scale just to get him through the door. Well, sort of Hugo Lloris is not on, I think he's on about 100, I believe. So we need to, it probably fits, but the issue is, and the thing that I think the club will be wary of, is if they've told everyone that this is the one rule for everyone, no matter who you are at the club, this is how you earn your way up to these sums, especially where Kane's concerned, then they don't want suddenly Dele Alli knocking on their door and going, why am I only on 50 or 60? Where's my 100? And, you know, I could go anywhere I wanted to and get three times as much in this. And they'd have the same from Vertonghen and Alderweireld, and, you know, it'd be a snowball moment. But Lloris is different because he's not a young player. He is one of the world's finest in his position in his prime. So I think the man deserves his money, because even if we pay him 120 grand a week, he's worth double that, and he would comfortably get double that elsewhere. I actually wrote about it, I think, last week, and I think it's just sort of, obviously we'll have some sort of restraints with the stadium and whatnot, but with the amount we're getting from television and shit like that, he deserves as much pie as he wishes, and as good as he's been this year as well. It's not as if we've got a leg to stand on in terms of his performance level, because he's been outstanding, and he's in credit with us because he had to go through them years with AVB and Sherwood where we got repeatedly shat on, and he was the only one that came out of it with any credit. So he just pay the man.
Give him his money. Give him all the money.
Yeah.
Give Leicester, to be honest, give Harry Kane all the money as well. Give him whatever he wants.
I'd be less inclined to sort of just throw it all at him. He probably does need a pay rise and would do well, but I quite like this new thing of, you know what, you're a young lad. If you're going to be here for a while, we'll keep you 5 years signed up so that you're on sort of as maximum a length of contract as anyone in this day and age really signs, and we can sort of have that security as a club, but we will knock you up 10, 15 grand every 6 months. So it's not as if they don't know where the next paycheck's coming from. None of them are struggling, but they're not getting all their eggs at once, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I just thought, I think there's something admirable about not being held to ransom by that sort of player and sort of giving them it in a manner that makes
sense. I guess
sense.
So. I mean, I agree with that more to the, you know, if you're applying that to like your Bentalebs, Eric Dyers, so on and so forth. But I think Harry Kane is pretty much established as one of the best strikers in Europe now, really, isn't he? Like, I think that, don't even think that's rose-tinted spectacles to say that. So, I do know what you're saying. I think it's somewhere in between, but I still kind of think Kane's a bit of a special case there because he's so just emblematic of the club now. And even, yeah, he was probably about, what, 70% fit, and he just brought so much to that game against Arsenal. It's just, he's that threat. And Koscielny, I've got to say, this is one thing we missed out of the start. Koscielny absolutely shits himself every time Kane's on the pitch. He cannot deal with him at all. But yeah, fuck Arsenal. TTT, Talking Tottenham Tactics, at TT Tactics, asks, do the US election results change how Jack feels about his Halloween costume? No, because as I was saying at the time, my justification for that was that Halloween is a time to, you know, express all the awful things, or, you know, you're supposed to dress something awful, scary and ghoulish. And so my, slutty Trump was that. Nick it.
What was slutty about
it? It's just, you know, it's what everyone says, you know, what are you going to Halloween as, like a slutty witch or a slutty cat. Right. And so I was just,
I was going to say, did you have, like, arse chaps hanging out of the back of your trousers?
Not on that occasion. I do normally, but...
it's normally on a Friday, yeah. Isn't it?
Nikhil Saglani, this is a devilish question. It's horrible. It really shouldn't be, though, and I guess the answer will be, yeah, if we're going to be serious about it. Nikhil Saglani, at Nikhil_Saglani, asks, would you swap Trump and Brexit for 10 years of Tim Sherwood at Tottenham? He stays no matter what he achieves or doesn't. Well, I mean, really, for the good of mankind. No, you would take Sherwood?
No, Trump's only going to be there for 8 years maximum. I'm not having 10 years of Tim Sherwood. That's like 2 years extra.
Brexit means Brexit, mate.
The courts are doing the best to stop that.
The enemies of the people exercising, like, you know.
Nah, I'm taking my chances here. I'm sorry. I'm putting my foot down. Tim Sherwood can get fucked.
He was awful, wasn't he? It was such a miserable... But it was such a miserable time to be a Tottenham fan as well.
Yeah, but, like, he's the sort of guy that, you know, in that parallel universe where he's our manager for a decade and Trump doesn't win, you know, he's in the pub every Friday going that, you know, world would be better if Trump had won. He's secretly sort of, he's buying Sun every morning for 20p. And, he thinks the judges are the enemies of the people. I'm taking the world as it is. I'm not gambling with it anymore. Trump will be there for, what, 8 years maximum, 4 years realistically. Brexit, fuck knows what's happening with that. It changes its mind every two frigging minutes, so we'll see.
Have you seen these opt-in EU citizenship things? That's quite good. Quite like the idea of that.
Yeah, I'll buy one of
definitely.
Those.
Definitely. I love the fact that, like Brexit camp are getting all pissy about it as well, saying that it's going to divide the British people. Like,
I think you've already done your fucking job.
The greatest irony of that. But anyway, let's not go into that one too much anyway. Stylish Riot at Stylish Riot asks, how many times is it acceptable for me to see Blink 182 live next summer? None, Jim. You're a grown man.
Have you ever seen Blink 182?
I have live? Seen Blink 182 live when I was about 17, 18.
I've never paid to see them directly. I think I've seen them headline a festival maybe once or twice, because they did Leeds Fest twice in quick proximity. I've seen them once for definite. I'm not sure if I saw them a second time. I was really drunk that time. So maybe definitely once, maybe twice, but I've never paid to go to a gig of theirs. He's not even in it anymore, that one with a funny voice. What's
Tom DeLonge.
Tom DeLonge. Yeah.
Did you say Tom DeLonge?
Whatever it is.
DeLonge.
He's too busy telling sort of the government about aliens.
Something
he?
Like that, yeah. That reminds me of just some posh girl I went to school with who used to swear till she was blue in the face that Kate Blanchett was called Kate Blanchet.
Blanchet? Yeah.
She's like, no, it's Kate Blanchet. Yeah.
Jesus. And how is she?
Let's have a look. Abracadaniel. Oh, this is a bit of a rude one. We don't know really. Let's do a laddie one. Here we go. At M. Priced. He's quite funny. He says, is it considered a protest to knock one out over Melania Trump? Or is that an endorsement?
Melania.
There you go. He's just written Melina here. So, Melania Trump, or is that an endorsement?
I don't know.
I don't really know, but it's quite funny.
Just, yeah. You could. If you do it over Michelle Obama, it's the same thing, because it's just she copy it anyway, isn't she?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So,
you've got a thing about women in powerful positions, don't you?
Oh, I say. Kind of, I guess. Like, yeah. I wouldn't say much more than anyone else, really. I wouldn't say it's a noted niche of mine.
I just remember us having a conversation about it once. I can't even remember who we were talking about.
Probably Liz Kendall. Always had a soft spot for Liz Kendall.
Theresa May.
Dear. Maggie Thatcher. Good God, the amount of fucking Tory MPs now that probably grew up bashing a bishop over Maggie.
Jesus.
Michael Cassidy at M_C_Cassidy asks, can you ask if it is possible for the new breed of THFC fan to be banned from using social media? I'm going to take that as a bit of a side swipe at me there, Michael. And no, I'm not going anywhere. So I'm going to take a selfie sticking to White Hart Lane on the last ever game wearing a half and half scarf.
Who are the new? What is the new brand?
No idea, probably. Me. People like us that, I don't know. Who knows? I'm not sure.
If he had a problem with us, he wouldn't ask us about it.
Might do, but it might be being, you know, yeah.
Clever. No, I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt. I don't know what it is. Maybe he's on about sort of like young kids who are there to, you know, take the lass out rather than watch football.
Yeah, but, you know, people go, like, people have always done. See, I don't buy this whole that's a new breed thing. You know, loads of people complain. Like, I always see people go, oh, whoppers that take their birds to games, blah, blah, blah. You look at fucking pictures from the 50s, 60s, all that. There's loads of pictures of couples and stuff in the grounds. And
no, but there's different, like, there's different of being a couple who go to the football together and that's a thing that happens. But there's people who do, like, have first dates there and whatnot. And sort of, you know, it's an event. So it's either the football or Nando's. It's like a cinema alternative. Nah, sorry, to give it its full name.
You're a whopper anyway. Yeah, me? I don't know. Just like, I like that. Weapon whopper. It's a good one. Wand's a good one as well. Under the Kosh blog at under underscore the Kosh asks, is Jermaine Genus the best pundit the club has ever produced? It's a good question, actually. He is a good pundit. I do like him. As an aside, actually, I think Pochettino would have used him really well as a player. I was quite like Genus, I'm going to be honest.
He always did a job against that.
He did. But do you think, I don't know, who's...
He's quite biased towards us whenever he speaks as well. Like, given that he played for a few clubs, he's always... Tottenham seems to be the one that stands out for him.
I don't think we'd really call Gary Lineker a pundit, would we? Because he's not really... He's a broadcaster. That's what I think.
Unless you're on about politics, then he's a lefty lover.
That's true, yeah. Who told everyone to get over Jamie Vardy just a few weeks, months ago, isn't it? But fuck it.
He's got... What is it? What is he... was it Kelvin McKenzie accusing him of having somebody write his tweets for him this week? No.
But don't forget, mate.
There's a fucking shit stain over
here. He's not even human, mate. He's just fucking...
Cockroach. Or talking of cockroaches. Alright. Did you see my Snapchat from the weekend?
No, I haven't. I deleted Snapchat a while ago, mate.
My grandma Mavis is Jamaican, and when Barack Obama got in 8 years ago, like one time we went round to her house and randomly she had like a portrait of Barack Obama for out of the newspaper that she'd framed and hung on the living room wall. We're just like, grandma, is that there? And she goes, he's black, I'm really proud of him. So it's like, over the, like, it's always something that I see it and I laugh. Only we went over this past weekend after the election result. And I was waiting for it because I was waiting for us to have a conversation, just us two, and for it to go quiet so everybody heard. I went, Grandma, are you going to be putting up a picture of Trump next to Barack Obama? She slapped my arm and she kissed her teeth. She goes, no, he's not a human, he's a cockroach. And I'm not laughed so much in a while. But yeah, she summed up my feelings exactly there.
What do you mean you're not a fan of Donald Trump, mate?
Sadly not, no.
Shit. Let's see. Is there anything else about football? No, I can't be asked to do any more football ones anyway. We had a good question about The Walking Dead.
I stopped watching The
Walking Dead. Well, this is it. Mark Lynch at Mark_Lynch1. Do you watch The Walking Dead? No. And you've just said no. He asks, when did you bin it off?
Start of last season. I went longer than you did. But for me, it was just, it became repetitive.
It did. Boring,
sort of like, something happened. It builds up to like a mid-season finale where like a new antagonist will reveal themselves. He'll kill one of the Black cast members. and then they'll find a way of overcoming that antagonist. They'll have three or four episodes where they squabble with new nice people in a new safe haven. New antagonist comes, another Black cast member dies, same thing happens again.
I just remember being so happy, like in the old season. I mean, I binned it off like one of those half season breaks when they'd all just been in that, like, you're right there, mate. You just...
yeah, I'm downtown buzzer.
I was going to say, you banging your head against the table in despair as we'd been talking about Trump.
I don't know what the fuck triggered you. Sounds like somebody's doing fireworks at my house.
It's quite scary, that, mate.
So I'll just feel man that's
way. Yeah, it's going down.
Man fire off shots.
I was going to say, yeah, I think we binned it off, you know, when they were in that hospital place and all those sort of security guards, that mid-season break, I think we binned it off in that one. But I just remember the early seasons. Remember that old... That old prick Dale, sort of like, the old man, how irritating he was. I remember like I was watching that and just being so happy when he died. Like like genuinely rejoicing. Because I remember every time those two sisters would do anything, he'd always be like, are you sure you should be doing that? You know, just like, mate, just fuck off. You're not their dad. You're nothing to do with them. Like, oh dear.
It was better when it was about them escaping zombies rather than sort of this weird soap opera with a zombie.
Yeah, yeah.
It became. I don't care. I don't care who sort of the stalker guy from Love Actually's trying to
show. Coral!
Yeah, let him kill someone. What was he? Egg from This Life.
I do, yeah. I do like those memes as well, though. The ones where they spelt Carl Coral, you know, as in the stuff in the sea. All
right.
Coral.
Yeah, it just got, it got really, I would go as to far. I would go as far as to fuck. No, I would go as far as to say that now it is television for people who don't like television.
Just say it's for the same way, bell ends.
In the same way that, you know, like you know, you've got that person who thinks they know music loads, and then you ask them what their favourite album of the year is, and it's like Mumford & Sons' sixth album. And you're like, fuck off, lad. That's the person who tells you that Walking Dead is the best thing on TV.
It's just dog shit, isn't it? I still haven't watched any of Westworld.
I don't want to watch it. I'm told you this now. Unless it's good for three straight seasons, I'm not invested.
But then, do you know what the problem is, though, mate? If it is good for three straight seasons, then you'll be like, but three seasons, can't be arsed, you know?
Yeah, but it's only like 10 episodes a season, isn't it? You can chew through a lot quickly enough. It's just that, because I've seen so many of those high concept things sort of have a really good first season and then have no fucking idea what to do next.
Yeah, agreed.
I can't be bothered with that in my life anymore. I deleted loads of stuff the other day because I had loads of stuff on my Skybox and loads of stuff on my my hard drive to watch. And I just went and like looked at it and I thought, you know, life's too short. I'm never going to be able to watch all this shit. So I just sort of made a list on paper of all the things I had and then just ticked them off as to like, I can live without watching this. I do not need to have it. Like when I was sort of, even a few years ago when I had the time in my day to sort of spend 3 hours just watching random shit, I don't have it anymore.
It's kind of where I've gotten with Narcos, you know, mate, like, because I've not really seen any, like, I've seen people be like, Narcos is good, it's pretty decent, but I've not really seen anyone really lose their shit over it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've not really seen anyone be like, it is must watch television. Like, it's really, really, really incredible. I've just seen most people be like, it's good. Yeah, it's all right. But, and, you know, and I can't really be asked to, like, invest that much time and effort into it. Well, effort's probably the wrong word, but, you know, I just can't be asked for it, to be truthful. But I might watch it one day. I might watch it one day.
There's loads of stuff on Netflix that I've not got around to. I think I might have come to the conclusion that half an hour is long enough for television. Like 40-minute shows, even though there's realistically not that much difference. Some of them just, they drag on and it feels like an undertaking to watch.
I think the only ones that don't, and because
miniseries is, because it feels as if
I like, I think Game of Thrones is still an hour. You do generally end up being like, oh, that wasn't an hour when it was.
But I think that's sort of the high watermark, isn't it?
I'm so looking forward to the new series as well.
The one that I'm looking forward to most is coming back is Curb. They did a teaser video of JB Smoove the other day on set. And if there's anything I need in my life right now to cheer me up, it's Larry David.
Pretty good. Pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that just even the thought of Larry David doing something makes me happy.
I've seen quite a few films lately, mate. Doctor Strange. We've both seen Doctor Strange. Not bad. Quite good. All right, isn't it?
Doctor Average.
Exactly, that's it. If you're a fan of the Marvel comic universe, you probably won't like it, because I've seen most people who do like that. You know, like the core ones, like the Avengers, Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, haven't seemed to like really the ones I've liked. So, like, the Splinter ones, like Ant-Man, and this Doctor Strange. And, well, I mean, everyone liked Deadpool, so that's a poor example. But I always prefer those ones. And I'd say this sort of falls more in line with those than it does the sort of Avengers-y type ones. It's all right. Benedict Cumberbatch is all right. It's quite weird seeing him do an American accent, I'm not going to lie. But he is basically just being Sherlock as well, isn't he, in this film?
Essentially. Yeah. And Rachel McAdams, really, there's no point in
her. Yeah, why? I really didn't get it. She's
such a good actress to do fuck all.
Great actress to just do nothing. I think there's that one pretty emotive scene when he basically tells her that he doesn't love her or whatever, and it's quite punchy.
But you can get just any old actress to be shat on for a scene. Yeah. You don't need, you know, an Oscar nominated actress to come in and do that.
It's crazy. I did find that pretty weird. Have you seen Nocturnal Animals yet?
I haven't. I really want to see it, but I haven't been yet. I really liked A Single Man, and Tom Ford is just good in general.
Aesthetics, isn't it? Aesthetics.
Yeah.
We'll wait until you've seen that one then to chat about that one.
Yeah. I did see Arrival.
Oh, looking forward to that.
The other Amy Adams ones. That's you know, if to juxtapose against Doctor Strange, if you want sci-fi that's done with, you know, some modicum of intelligence and isn't just people bashing shit and wobbling their hands about and whatnot, then go and watch that. I think it's fantastic. We went on 11 o'clock showing on a Friday night. Me and my dad went, and my mum decided to skip it. And when we walked out, I said to my dad, because we went for a piss, and I went, oh, I'm glad mum's not here. Tenor says that one of us would have had to explain the ending to her. And as we came out the toilet, some people who were in the same showing of us, one of them was literally having to explain the third act to someone. I was like, yep, that's what I meant. Because it's one of those where it's not a twist. It's
no spoilers.
It's just sort of, no, I'm not saying what it is. It's just sort of, it's a splintered narrative that then comes together at one point. And as the film drops the penny, if you've not been paying attention and if you're not sort of following it closely and you don't go with it and you don't allow it to have that moment to sort of, you know, fit the final piece into a jigsaw, then I imagine you will lose it. But it's, if you go with it, then it's fantastic. And I don't see any reason why you wouldn't, because
you heard it here first, kids. Pay attention.
pay attention.
I saw a. Speaking of don't do drugs, they're not fun at all or cool.
Disagree.
Captain Fantastic, I saw. Quite enjoyed that. It was quite good.
Captain Fantastic?
Yeah.
What's Captain Fantastic?
It's one of those kind of like.
I heard about the weather.
Yeah, like one of these sort of shoegazing indie, you know, quirk-alongs. But it's you know, it's good fun. It's decent.
Was that the guy who did When We Live in the Shadows? Like a Waititi?
No, I think he did Hunt for the Wilder People, which is similar, a similar movie, but is. In New Zealand, set in New Zealand. But they
have you ever seen that? What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah, I have done. It's pretty good, isn't it? Like, it's got the Flight of the Conchords lads in it and stuff, hasn't it? As well.
Yeah. Well, one of them at least.
That one in the basement, like the ancient one, is horrible. So horrible. It was honestly, I don't know why. Weird. It just made me feel a bit sick. Like, just because of what it was like. But yeah, I did like that movie. That was a good one.
Bless you.
I don't really know. What else have I watched? I've watched quite a few. Oh, I saw Imperium as well. It's like, you know, Daniel Radcliffe when he's in the FBI and he has to go undercover into like a neo-Nazi. It's not bad, you know.
When he joins Trump's
Yeah, it's
cabinet.
Not great, but it's not bad by any means. It's you know, it's fairly enjoyable.
Have you seen that one where he farts a lot yet?
Yeah, Swiss Army Man.
I've not seen it yet. I wanted to watch it just because it sounded like interesting to see whether or not it was worthy of being too
old. No, it's not. Do you know what it is, mate? It's good, but it would have been better as a short film. Like it's a good idea, but it doesn't stretch across 2 hours.
So like Paul Dano as well.
I can't stand Paul Dano. That's the thing. I really can't stand him. I just don't like his face. I don't like the way he delivers stuff. It's like he falls into that same sort of camp as Jesse Eisenberg, that sort of glib, smug kind of actor. I just not a big fan. But I think I don't think he's a poor actor. I think he's quite the opposite. I think Paul Dano and Jesse Eisenberg are both decent actors. I just don't like them.
The one thing that Jesse Eisenberg should stop doing is trying to write for the New Yorker. It's appalling.
Oh, really? What's what? Is it like hot take articles or?
No. You know, have you ever read the New Yorker as a magazine properly and sort of the different sections it has? It's got like humor sections and stuff like that. So he does stuff for that, and it's not humorous.
Is it just people being like, just give it to him? It's Jesse Eisenberg, you know? Is it?
Oh, I imagine so. It's like it's in the Daily Shout section and stuff like that. It's these little short stories, and somebody who's clearly like thinks he's been to, maybe has been to like some sort of creative writing course. Yeah. And he's trying to do something clever, and like it's essentially what, like, if he was anybody else, it'd be some shit 3,000 word essay on Medium, but it's Jesse Eisenberg, so it's in the New Yorker, and it's not really good.
Have you been watching The Humans at all, the thing on Channel 4?
I never got into it, the first season, so I've not caught up with it. Is that the one with what, Gemma Chan?
Yeah.
I've not watched it at all, no. Sadly.
It's a shame, mate. It's decent. I mean, it's very UK TV. It's on the upper, I'd say it's not, no, not really on the upper end. It's on the mid end of UK TV, in that, you know, they always lack that polish of US series and such now. But I've still quite enjoyed it. I have enjoyed this series as well. It's starting to go into this pretty interesting moral ground now as to whether or not, you know, are they just robots? Should they be tried? If, you know,
what's it actually about?
They were to
robots.
Well, yeah, they're kind of like androids, so it's about AI android things, you know. But they start off as like home appliances, but there's a small group of them that were made self aware by, like, you know, this whatever, one of the fathers of AI type thing. So in amidst all these like robots that are just servile things, there's like a small group of four or five of them, and by the end, I mean, apologies if it ruins anything, but by the end of the first series, they basically release like, or they have like a piece of coding that means that they can start turning other robots self-aware and waking them up and so on and so forth.
You've not sold it to me, I'm not going to lie.
It is good, mate. It is good.
I think I might survive without that one.
It's worth it. I don't know. Give it a go.
What's it on Channel 4?
Yeah, you watch it all on 4 a day.
We'll see. If I find the time, I'll have a gander, but I'm not making any promises.
Planet Earth's been decent as well.
I've got them recorded. I've not watched them yet. I keep seeing people like posting pictures of animals dying and whatnot.
I mean, even if you're not that interested in the nature, the wildlife behind it, just the shots, like the production values are just spectacular. It's so good. Like, it's so insanely good. Nothing comes close to the BBC in terms of that sort of shit, I don't think. Those sort of wildlife-y documentaries. National Geographic can suck a fat one.
Attenborough.
Yeah, mate, it's a Don. National day and national mourning when he goes. Week.
It'll probably be in like a couple of weeks now in this year. Not that I'm trying to kill him off.
It'd be grim. But yeah, that's about that. Should we kill it there then, mate? Let's do it. Yeah, right.
I think we've been sufficiently sort of perky given the circumstances.
We have made Tottenham great again. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Jesus. Couldn't resist, mate. If you do want to listen to any of the previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, you can do so on iTunes and Acast. You can follow us on Twitter at @RTR_pod. You can go to the website, rtrpod.com, where you can find all the previous episodes as well, embedded into articles and whatever, download them. Leave us some reviews on iTunes and stuff as well, so it'll push us up the ratings. Come on, you bastards. Come on, you Spurs.
Thank you. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.